Now we have old computers in our closet. Hey, honey, there's our wedding computer. There's my computer when I was single. I guess I should destroy that one. Snow job. Last winter, Jeannie and I took our then 7-year-old, 5-year-old, 2-year-old, and 6-month-old skiing on the other side of the country. That seems like a good idea, right? Well, it did to this genius. I even had 4 months to not realize it was a ridiculous idea. No, I wasn't in the coma during that period. I spent that time busy, unaware, and planning the trip. Our story starts in October. I had just booked some theater shows in Salt Lake City during January's Martin Luther King holiday weekend. Suddenly, I had a brilliant thought. I'll bring the whole family and take my kids skiing in Park City. Perfect. It will be fun for everyone. The snow, the hot chocolate. I'll get my city kids out on the slopes. They'll love it. Sure, it might seem a little strange to have such a large family in the heart of Mormon country, but let's do it. What better way to commemorate Martin Luther King Jr. than going skiing around a bunch of rich white people? I actually thought I was being smart. I'm not really a skier, but I wanted to expose my young children to skiing. Friends had always talked about the joy of taking their kids skiing. Let's do this. Since I'm no ski expert, I'll make this as easy as possible. I decided we would stay at a nice ski resort. It'll be expensive, but it'll be worth it. Of course, I'll have to fly all the kids across the country to Salt Lake City, which is also pretty costly, but this will be the family vacation. I guess a 6-month-old can't ski, so we'll have to bring a babysitter. Okay, so that's another expense. Obviously, I'm not going to buy skis or ski pants. We'll rent them. That will add an expense. But this is not just the family vacation. This will be the family vacation. If only cost turned out to be my only problem. Unfortunately, I only realized this was a really bad idea when we were on the plane flying to Salt Lake. Whenever I travel with my young children, I'm always reminded of an important travel lesson. Never travel with my young children. The flight from New York to Salt Lake City is 5 hours, but with 4 young kids, it only feels like 50. It wasn't just torture for me. Let's just say traveling across the country with a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a 6-month-old is not really how you make friends on a plane. Pretending you don't know your kids is not funny to the businessman trying to sleep in the window seat. Apple is yet to develop a device that can engage a 2-year-old. After 4 hours of convincing her that she could only hear the movie on the iPad with the headphones on, I became painfully aware that I had made an enormous mistake. As the plane landed in Salt Lake, I remembered that our friends who took their kids skiing were incredibly rich. Oh, and their kids were teenagers. And their kids were only 1 kid. And they owned a ski condo in Vermont. And I'm an idiot. As we gathered our bags in Salt Lake, I resigned myself to the realities. I'm a fool, I can't afford this trip, and this is going to be really hard with a baby. Anyway, we were there, and I was determined to make it work. Let's enjoy it. Just a few more steps before we get to the hotel, and I can start preparing for my show that night. After the hour drive from the airport to the resort, we were advised by the lady behind the desk to go into town to pick up our skis and avoid dealing with the chaos the next morning. I learned later there was a courtesy service included by the hotel that came to your room and fitted everyone for skis, but somehow the person checking us in had never heard of this service. They only worked at the hotel that provided the service. After the unnecessary journey into the heart of town, renting the skis became a journey in itself. Let me be honest, most people in the world are more patient than me, and none of these people are my children. Getting your kids fitted for skis and then not taking them skiing is not fun for anybody. In defense of my children's bad behavior, following a long day of traveling, we were also taking them shopping and not buying them anything. The next day was the first day of skiing. Getting little kids dressed for skiing is not easy and may take a while, but at least by the time you're finished zipping them all up, they have to go to the bathroom. For the life of me, I can't figure out how I ever thought it was a good idea to take a 2-year-old that had just mastered walking to a ski lesson. Eventually, we got everyone to his or her ski classes, and Jeannie and I skied for 10 minutes before we had to pick them up. After an overpriced lunch, we dropped our 2-year-old off for a nap, and we went skiing as a family, kind of. I suppose there are many approaches to skiing. Jeannie and our 7-year-old Mari took a more cautious, leisurely approach to the mountain. Jeannie made it clear that because she had a 6-month-old and a 2-year-old back at the hotel, she was not interested in doing any daredevil stuff. The approach of my 5-year-old, Jack, can only be described as straight down until you crash. There are people on Jackass who would find this approach reckless. I can't believe that I thought this would be relaxing at all. Even riding a chairlift with little kids who love to scare the hell out of their parents is incredibly stressful. For some reason, ski mountains are marked with some sort of Lucky Charm marshmallow identification system. There were blue diamonds, green moons, oh, I don't remember exactly. I just remember sticking to the green and avoiding the dreaded black diamonds. Near the end of the second and final day of skiing, everyone got more adventurous, and we were ready to move on to the blue. Well, the kids and I were. Jeannie was hesitant. She didn't want the slightest injury to interfere with the daunting task of flying back to the East Coast with the babies. At the end of the day, with some coaxing, I got Jeannie to go down one of the more difficult blue hills with the big kids and me. After reassuring her it was totally doable and fun, we dared the chairlift up. Getting off the chairlift, our 5-year-old instantaneously transformed himself into a bullet, went barreling down the hill, and immediately wiped out. I skied down and helped him up. Then I helped my 7-year-old up. Then I helped my 5-year-old up again. Then I helped my 7-year-old up again. Then they both helped me up. After a long string of killer wipeouts, eventually we made it down the hill. At the bottom, we waited for Jeannie. Then we waited some more. My children asked, "Where's Mama?" I giggled, thinking how mad Jeannie would be at me for having her do the more difficult hill. After way too long of staring up at the hill and waiting for Jeannie, they began to close the ski lifts, signaling the end of the day. Starting to panic, I asked Ski Patrol for assistance. I was assured they wouldn't leave anyone on the mountain. Wouldn't leave anyone on the mountain? What? The kids became more concerned, and I tried to be cool. Then another half hour passed as I watched the Ski Patrol making plans for what they would do that night. Okay, now I was frightened. I began to consider the reality that my wife had skied off a cliff and died, leaving me with 4 young children, all because I dragged her across the country to go skiing. I had also convinced her to ski a hill she didn't want to take. I was not only the worst father in the world, I think I could be prosecuted for murder. After about an hour of bargaining with God, the Ski Patrol Central got a radio call that a woman on the slopes had been hit from behind by a snowboarder. It was Jeannie. She had accidentally ended up on one of the dreaded Black Diamond Hills. Apparently, her optional helmet saved her life. She had been recovering in some sort of ski patrol station and was skiing back down, shaken up but not injured. I began to breathe again. I put on my stoic daddy face as I dried my kids' tears and told them Mommy was okay. Luckily, Jeannie was too relieved to be mad at me. When we finally arrived back in New York City and settled into our cramped apartment, I did a head count. We were all alive, a little poor, but alive. All in all, the ski trip was worth it. We can go a year without groceries, but I can't go a day without a wife. On the road again. During the summer and spring vacations, I take my kids camping. Well, actually, I take my kids on a giant tour bus so Jeannie and I can work and the kids can pretend they are camping. I wish I liked camping. Then again, I also wish I liked running marathons and eating vegetables. I know my kids would love camping, and I'm also sure my kids would love a dog, but given the size of our apartment and the fact Jeannie is supposedly allergic, that's not going to happen either. I think she's just allergic to the fact she would be the only one taking care of the dog. I guess you could say I'm allergic to camping. Jeannie loves camping because she says camping was a tradition in her family. I always point out that prior to the invention of the house, camping was a tradition in everyone's family. I don't get camping. Hey, you want to burn a couple of vacation days sleeping on the ground outside? Chances are you'll wake up freezing and covered in a rash. No thanks. If camping's so great, why are the bugs always trying to get in your house? My parents never took me camping, and I think it's because they loved me. Has anyone ever been a happy camper? Whenever we use the term happy camper, we're being sarcastic. He is not a happy camper. Why don't we just call the person a camper? He's miserable. You know who's a happy camper? The guy leaving the campsite. He gets to take a shower. I've tried to explain to my children that we do a different type of camping that includes a tour bus, hotels, and best of all, no camping. So why a tour bus? Although I complain about my children, I really do hate being away from them. I learned quickly that being gone for a weekend doing shows can quickly turn into being gone for a week doing shows. Our initial solution was to bring our children for long weekends whenever we could. As our clan grew, this quickly became cost prohibitive. Our solution was a tour bus. Yes, a tour bus. People often think we mean a Winnebago or a large van, but we're talking about an actual tour bus like rock stars use. But there's no stripper pole. This may seem like overkill, but it makes perfect sense. The bus is roughly the same size as our apartment, but it gets better. The tour bus means no airports, no security lines, no taking little kids through security lines at airports. Our bus picks us up at our apartment building, we load everyone and all the stuff on, and we are off doing shows. The bus is expensive to rent, so we do a show a night as we dart across North America, usually for 2 weeks. Some kids go to Florida or have a summer house. Our children will have bus camping memories. There are 6 bunks and a large bed on the tour bus, perfect for me, Jeannie, our 5 children, and a babysitter who always seems to quit whenever we get back from our camping bus tour. We also bring a portable crib, or travel cage. We drive mostly at night because children don't really understand the concept of no walking while the bus is moving. On a typical day, we wake up on the bus in a new city and head into a hotel to check in. We don't really need the hotel because we have the bus, but we need the hotel pool and the breakfast. They are usually non-fancy hotels that provide a complimentary breakfast. I should point out that this complimentary breakfast is neither complimentary of the hotel or the meal of breakfast. We are always grateful to have it, but it often feels like a breakfast garage sale.
Okay, corporate headquarters says we have to offer a free breakfast, but they won't give us any money. Well, we could make some biscuits and gravy from paper mache. I heard a middle school went out of business. Maybe we could get their juice machine. It's from the 1950s, but who cares?
Great ideas. All right, moving on. How much can we overcharge for internet access? After breakfast, we try to see a local tourist attraction. I've taken my children to parks, fairs, and zoos all across the U.S. and Canada. I've taken my children to see Mount Rushmore. It wasn't a big decision. We were in Rapid City, and it really came down to either seeing Mount Rushmore or doing nothing. Mount Rushmore is beautiful, even though my children were disappointed at the absence of rides. Is that a slide? No, that's Thomas Jefferson's nose. The Black Hills of South Dakota are breathtaking. They are sacred to the Lakota Indians, and out of respect, our government has carved 4 white guys into one of the mountains.
These hills are sacred to us, Carver.
Yeah, we'll be done in a couple of decades. These guys I'm carving were all about freedom, especially the 2 who owned slaves. Just consider it a gift from us white people, a reminder of all the good things we've done for you. After seeing a local site, we usually head to the hotel pool. Every hotel we stay at must have a pool. For us, staying at a hotel with a pool is probably more important than staying at a hotel with beds. The hotel pools are really my kids' favorite part of our bus trips. This is because young children love any kind of pool. Indoor, outdoor, above ground, cesspool, it doesn't matter. They may hate taking a bath, but they love a pool. It could be March and the pool could be freezing, covered in leaves and bugs, and one of my children will beg, "Daddy, can we go in? Oh, please, please." I always tell them to ask their mother to put on her suit. You can always tell a hotel has an indoor pool because their lobby will smell like a bucket of bleach. I'm always tempted to ask someone at the front desk, "Do you have an indoor pool or did someone just clean up a murder scene?" Because my eyes are bleeding. Swimming with my kids is really fun. It's not really great for the unlucky business traveler at the pool who wanted to have a relacking swim. When we have our 5 kids in the hotel pool, strangers always look at us like we're overzealous dog walkers. On more than one occasion, I've witnessed a business traveler enter the hotel swimming pool area, see our screaming, swimming children, and immediately turn around and walk out. They probably think there really is no difference between swimming in a pool with 5 little kids and swimming in a toilet. Swimming is really the first time a little kid can multitask. I can play and pee? This is amazing! Let it be known I have no proof that any of my kids have peed in a pool, but other kids with worse parents probably do. After my children have ruined the pool, we all head back to the soon-to-be-ruined hotel room. I'll head to the bus to get ready for that night's show. Jeannie and the babysitter will bathe and feed the kids before putting them to sleep on the bus.
Jeannie will then meet me at the show, I'll do the show, and then Jeannie and I will head back to the bus to depart. Why are we putting the kids to bed on the bus when we have a hotel room we've already paid for? Actually, in order to make these trips work, we often pay for two nights at a hotel and don't sleep at the hotel. When you are driving overnight and arriving at a hotel at 8 a.m., you can't check in till at least 3 p.m., so we have to pay the hotel room the night before. To make matters more interesting, the hotel room that we paid for the night before at which we've arrived at 8 a.m. requires that we check out at 3 p.m., but we have a show that night at 8 p.m., and at 11 p.m. we leave that city on the bus to get to the next city. Therefore, even though we are still not sleeping overnight at the hotel after the show, we must also pay for that night at the hotel. And that's how you pay for two nights at a hotel and never sleep there. This word problem will continue until I can figure out a way to get a tour bus with a pool. So after the show, we leave the hotel parking lot and drive off to the next campsite. A campsite without a tent, a fire, or bug spray. My favorite kind of campsite. One with internet access and a shower. Eskimo pies. Every night before I get my 1 hour of sleep, I have the same thought. Well, that's a wrap on another day of acting like I know what I'm doing. I wish I were exaggerating, but I'm not. Most of the time I feel entirely unqualified to be a parent. I call these times being awake. I really do try to be a good dad. I mean try, because nothing about parenting has come naturally to me. Last summer we had four children, and I noticed there were only three Eskimo pies left in the freezer for dessert. The first thought that came to me was, well, looks like I'm eating three Eskimo pies. In spite of my lack of parental instincts, in the end I did the right thing. I only ate one. That way the four of them could split the last two evenly. How else are they going to learn math? Just trying to do my part. There is no training camp for being a parent, no special school, and no daddy doctorate degree. I try to learn by observing other people, but parenting just seems to come easier for them. My wife is no exception. Jeannie makes parenting look so easy. Observing her mother our children is like watching rhythmic gymnastics. So smooth, so energetic, so smiley. I think mothers have an unfair advantage. They've had a 9-month head start on the bonding thing. The baby already knows the mother's voice, heartbeat, and tempo. Of course, the baby will automatically like her better. It's favoritism, really. Sure, men are encouraged to bond during pregnancy, but it always feels a little esoteric to me. Men are told to talk to the baby in utero via the mother's lower abdomen. That's not awkward at all, especially when your 6-year-old walks in with his friend. Why is your dad doing that? I feel like nature also cheated me in the nurturing department. I don't even have breasts. Well, I kind of do, but not the kind a newborn or anyone else is interested in. Nurturing for a mother is instinctive. While breastfeeding the mother is not just feeding the baby, she's nurturing the baby. From that time on, everything the mother does seems to have that added element of natural nurture. Meals, stories, laundry, and organizing their rooms have this nurturing element. They are not just doing chores. It is a natural instinct for the mother to make the child feel safe, protected, and comfortable. She is driven to do these things and actually wants to do these things. I can kind of relate because I have a really strong natural instinct to eat cheese and take naps. I think most men have to be instructed how to nurture a newborn. When our first child was born, I actually Googled men bonding with a newborn. I need instruction. Most men need to follow directions. That's why men love the GPS system. It's no mistake that the GPS voice is female. Men could really use a daddy GPS. In 1/10 of a minute, your toddler will bump his head on the coffee table. Prepare to show sympathy and caring. Recalculating. Before you think this is a diatribe about the differences between men and women, I confess that it's not just my gender that contributes to my ineptitude as a parent. I wish it was that easy to explain away. A lot of men have nurturing instincts that you don't need breasts for, and they take shape by doing manly things with your kids. I can't even relate to this. I am totally intimidated by other dads. I actually feel as though I'm missing some man genes. I don't have a workbench or a toolbox. Hell, Home Depot commercials make me feel like a sissy. I don't care about golf or cars. If I weren't obsessed with football and steak, I probably would have to turn in my testicles. I'll never be inviting my son down to my wood shop so we can handcraft a go-kart together. Don't they sell those things at Target anyway? They probably deliver, too. It's not just in comparison to moms or other dads that I feel inferior. It's to all other parents in general. To me, it seems like other parents are smarter, more organized, more patient. Other parents remember that the napkin is as important an element to the ice cream cone as the ice cream and the cone, maybe even more important. Other parents remember to bring drinks to the park and towels to the beach, not me.
Today we're going to let the sun dry you off. If you're thirsty, head over to the water fountain the homeless guy is sleeping under.
Other parents seem calmer and filled with endless patience. I watch them in awe at the park. Hunter, Mommy is not pleased with your behavior right now. I always have to hold myself back from yelling at other people's bratty kids.
Shut up, Hunter, or I'll come over to your house and break all your toys. What kind of name is Hunter anyway? Good luck with that.
By the way, never try to discipline another parent's kid unless you are a teacher or a lifeguard. You will only come off like a lunatic. Well, at least that's what my friend told me. I do have moments of hope. Just when I am positive that I'm the least qualified parent out there, I will witness one of my calm friends with kids lose it and yell at their kids. I feel like I won the lottery. Truth is, all parents snap. I'm sure even Deepak Chopra snapped at his kids. Seeing a friend raise their voice at their child should make me cringe, but it always gives me an enormous sense of relief. I do try my best. All fathers do. Well, most of them do. Well, most don't. But let's face it, the task is overwhelming. This is why most fathers have ridiculous hobbies like golf and ice fishing. Why would someone volunteer to wake up early on their day off to hit a tiny ball around a field while roasting in the hot sun, or to sit on a frozen pond in the middle of winter, unless it was easier than being an involved dad? I will always feel inadequate in comparison to the natural instincts of a mother, so it is much easier to do the manly thing and run away. Since I am anti-outdoors, when I run away, I watch football. I relate to the quarterback. Most of my life feels like I'm down a touchdown with 48 seconds left in the game. The odds are against me, but I still have to try. Right? You're gonna miss this. It seemed only yesterday Jeannie was having a baby. Of course, it was yesterday that Jeannie was having a baby, but what I'm saying is that they grow up fast. When I'm with all my little ones, people with grown or teenage children always tell me, "You're gonna miss this." I have to assume they are talking about my children being young and not the conversation I'm having with them. Because I'm not going to miss people giving me advice about children. From the moment the baby bump shows, strangers view it as an open invitation to give unsolicited advice about everything baby-related.
Your wife shouldn't be walking upstairs. Looks like your wife's having a boy.
Then with the newborn, isn't your baby hot? Isn't your baby cold? Or my favorite regarding the baby in a sling. Can he breathe in there? No, he can't, and I plan to put you in here next. Of course, you're going to miss this is not typical advice. It's a confession from these parents with older children that they may not have taken enough time to appreciate the chaos. It is a sincere, generous confession. That's why when people tell me, "You're going to miss this," I always offer to let them take a trip down memory lane and come over and change some of Patrick's diapers at 4 a.m. or tell my 3-year-old the same Scooby-Doo story for 5 hours. I get it. Well, I think I do. I know I will miss how small and cute my children are. I already miss how much lighter they were to carry to bed last month. I'll miss my kids' sincere excitement at wanting to see their daddy. Our 15-month-old Michael thinks I'm the greatest person on the planet. Granted, he's only known me for 15 months. I'll miss lying to them and actually getting away with it. I'll miss being smarter than they is. I'll miss the confiscated candy bowl in the cupboard. I'll miss the access to kid food. Did you know you can't get into Chuck E. Cheese's without a kid? Where else except everywhere am I going to get horrible pizza? I'll miss being embarrassed by their behavior in places like grocery stores. Don't eat that, especially when they are eventually embarrassed by my behavior in grocery stores. Dad, don't eat that. I suppose it's ironic after all the public toddler meltdowns that my children will someday be embarrassed by me, I know it's going to happen. I know every parent has to deal with it. Maybe even God had to deal with this. Maybe Jesus was like, Dad, just drop me off at the manger and pick me up around Easter, okay? Of course, I don't think I'm God, but I am a little godlike to my children. This is what I'm going to miss the most. Even though they don't view me as the tyrant I'd hope to be, to them, I'm all-powerful. I'm their creator and provider. They love me and kind of fear me. They want to be in my arms when they are scared. They want my forgiveness after they've done something wrong. Daddy, are you happy at me? They want to be with me. I know this won't last. The expectations have been set too high. It's only a matter of time before they are totally disappointed when I fall off that lofty pedestal and they realize I'm just a giant kid myself. It's at that point I'll run into some dad with a toddler gazing up at him in wonder, and I'll say, "You're gonna miss this." And he'll say, "Hey, aren't you the Hot Pocket guy?"
This is Jim Gaffigan. We hope you enjoyed this unabridged production of Dad is Fat by Jim Gaffigan. This program was directed by Scott Sherritt, executive producer Dan Zitt, text copyright 2013 by Jim Gaffigan, production copyright 2013 Random House Inc. All rights reserved. I love you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.